Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week I am cheating with the bio of the guest because I've stolen the one you wrote on your website. I thought it was really good, so normally I try and like cobble together something myself and then hope the guest is not offended by my interpretation of their career. So instead, your one is excellent from your website, so I will read it as you, because that's how it's written. I'm a former professional swimmer who failed to make the Olympics. Thankfully, I'm kind of funny, and my stand-up comedy has been featured in New York Times and Time Out magazine. Yes, I've met Michael Phelps. So please welcome Laura Sogar.
Laura Sogar of Having Met Michael Phelps fame, yes. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Well, the listeners, I'm sure, as the interview goes on, will know that you've got a connection with somebody else, a past guest. But first, to start us off, do you mind telling your dating story?
Absolutely. So I am, as you may have gleaned from my bio there, a former professional swimmer. And as doing that, I was swimming down in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas in Austin. Really, really great swimming school. The reason that that is relevant is because my entire life was swimming up till that point. 20 years in the water. It's all I did. It's like all I knew, pretty much. So when it came to dating, like I didn't have a ton of time for that. I had relationships, and then there was a couple of years where I was like kind of dating around, and I would go on Bumble and, you know, the Hinge and various apps like that. And there was one date that I had that I looked back and realized I was probably being fully chaotic. I came at it from I may have been the bad person on that date, and I still feel kind of bad about it, but also it's kind of funny. So I'm hoping that this guy also laughs about it. But essentially, I had matched with this guy, and he was wonderful, very attractive. We chatted back and forth. He seemed normal enough. And we decided to go out to like lunch on a Saturday or something like that and had a couple of drinks, nothing major, but went to like go get Mexican food. And I decided we should go to Barton Springs. And Barton Springs is, why would you be familiar? But it's like this big outdoor river that's kind of like made into a pool sort of thing in Austin. So it's, you know, fairly deep open water, but there's some shallow areas that you can kind of walk around and stuff. And it's hot. It's hot in Austin, right? So it's like 100 degrees or something. So a lot of people go, and it's a nice way to just kind of like play around and cool off or whatever. And I was like, we should go. We should go to Barton Springs after the date. I've had like a margarita. I'm like, let's vibe. I love swimming. And this guy is like, oh, and he's clearly like enjoying himself and the dinner was there. The lunch was fine. We, you know, had a normal conversation, no red flags there, but he's like, I don't really know how to swim. And I'm like, no problem. We're still going to go, and then this is the part where I'm like, Laura, that was him saying no politely, but you instead were like, why would we not go anyway? It's 100 degrees and I want to go, unfortunately. So yeah, I've learned better manners since then. But we go to the place and, you know, we hop around or whatever. Like I jump in the water, obviously right away. I'm a swimmer. Like I couldn't be more comfortable in the water. This guy is clearly like scared. He is scared of swimming, but it's like not, that is such a foreign concept to me. Because I grew up in the water that I like wasn't registering it. And I kept being like, oh, like, why don't you want to get in? Like, you know what I mean? And I feel like such an asshole about it. We went back to his place after that. And you could tell he was clearly just feeling very emasculated by the entire thing. Poor guy. And we didn't go out on another date afterwards. So I accidentally shamed/emasculated this guy for not being able to swim because I'm a mean person on accident. But maybe.
No, I think that does sound like a genuine accident. And I can see how when you were so involved in swimming, you just weren't
like,
coming
what are you
across.
Talking about,
yeah.
Man?
You just weren't.
My friends afterwards, they were like, are you an idiot? The guy couldn't swim. You're trying to kill him? What are you doing? Like, I was like, oh, whoops.
But also, I think at that point, there's no winning it back, right? Because what can you say? Oh, I've done some lifeguarding. Wouldn't help. Would have made him feel worse.
Right, right. Because that's the other thing. It's like not just that he couldn't swim. It's also the fact that I clearly could swim like very well. So it was like, ha ha, I can do what you can't.
Yeah. So not only did you go straight into the pool, you did like a triple spin and you're like, wait, yeah. Are you joining me? What?
Yeah, I'm like sprinting and he's like, wait, he's like running along the deck. What are you doing? this is such a fun date for me. Oh my gosh, I'm having a great time.
Oh, that's such a good story. But I can see how it happened, right? And I think that happens quite a lot where you have something you enjoy and you really want to share it with someone. And it can be a really good date idea, but you know, there's also an argument that maybe he could have been a little bit stronger on like being clear with you. Like, I really can't swim.
I was very dense and I'd had a drink. I know myself well enough to know he was probably saying those things, but I was just like misinterpreting and, you know, hearing what I wanted to hear in my brain. Like him being like, oh no, like I couldn't possibly swim. Like, you know, versus like, no, I cannot swim. Like, yes, you can. Like, you can do it. I'll teach you. So that's my one story where I was definitely the bad date. He probably has a much more intense version of like, this asshole like took me to the water, tried to kill me.
Showed off, did all kinds of tricks in the water just because she was bored of waiting for me.
Yeah, she just got a quick workout in. She's like just obsessed with working out.
I also, one of my favorite niche things, so I'm glad you did it, is hearing people explain something that's very familiar to them. Like you explained the location that you clearly know very well, but realizing in that moment that not everyone knows it. I love watching people do that because they sort of, you can see them get in their head and be like, how do I explain it? Like it's a normal thing. And it clearly is, but you just then like overcorrect of like, okay, I need to explain why this is obviously a known and loved thing.
Yeah, Barton Springs. Like, why would people in the UK have any clue Barton Springs is? If you go to Austin, I recommend checking it out if you can swim. That apparently is a pretty key function of Barton. It's funny because it's like a river. Like, it's just a river they kind of roped off and like put concrete around. So it's like, now it's a pool, but it's still very cold and deep, and it's a river. Like, we're swimming in a river.
Yeah. And so by contrast, had you had other dates before or since where you did go swimming and it went better?
Well, that's the other thing is like a lot, as you can imagine, during athletics, like you end up meeting a lot of people who are also swimmers. So close to all of my boyfriends beforehand were on the swim team and stuff like that. So that would have been a super normal, like fun date thing to go do. And especially when it's hot out, like that's just like, it's pretty common, you know, it'd be like going to the beach or something like that. So I definitely had that go normally in the past. And I guess it kind of showed the fact that I like did not date very many people who were not in my extremely niche group of folks. I was like, I need to broaden my horizons a little bit, you know, understand people's backgrounds better.
Yeah. You've talked about a little bit in your comedy that you grew up and you were a very tall girl from a young age. And so sometimes you made these kind of mistakes even very young where you were like, oh, I like this boy. I'm going to race him.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my whole thing. I'm like, the best way to get my crush to like me is to beat him in the mile run. Because I remember distinctly when I was in like fifth grade and I'm towering over these, you know, guys hit puberty a lot later than women. And I hit puberty like immediately out of the womb. I was like, let's go. I'm almost 6 feet tall. Like I was enormous. I just grew really, really quickly. So I was fast as shit. Like I was quick out there. And I was like, oh, these guys like to race each other. Like I like this guy. So I'm going to race him too. And then that's just not exactly, you know, I think especially that generation, this is a while ago at this point, like 20-ish years ago, you know, it wasn't as cool for a girl to just kick your ass in an athletic endeavor and then be like, yeah, I'm into that. That sounds nice. And I didn't realize that at all. Like I was just like, oh, I'm extremely competitive and I want to impress this person. So I'm going to try to beat them without understanding like, oh, that's probably not going to have the desired outcome, which is probably why I was a pretty good swimmer. You know, at the end of the day, I'd never really crossed my mind. So there's a lot of benefits to that mentality. But on the other hand, didn't get my crush to like me.
Yes. Although it sounds like what you've described, you were kind of competitive out of the womb. Like that's very much your approach to life.
Pretty much. I started swimming. Literally, my first lesson was at 1 year old. By five, I was swimming competitively. Again, I grew really fast. So I ended up being good young, which helped. Like it's much easier to be competitive when you're winning, I will say. Like you're like, oh my gosh, I love competing. And it's, yeah, you're winning because you're enormous, idiot. Like you got 30 pounds on these other six-year-olds. Like, of course you're winning. And that kind of just fueled the fire for me to be like pretty intense with everything else I do. Which is what a lot of my comedy is based on now, is just looking back and realizing like how, like I was like one of those really terrifying little, you know, you see the women's gymnastics or stuff like that, where they're just so serious and like, I'm gonna win. Relax, go play with a toy or something for a second. And it's so funny because then I ended up swimming for so long. And then my one goal I didn't even make. And now I'm like, ah! Trying to make the Olympic team. I got fourth at Olympic trials, which is pretty good still, but it was not like my goal. So I was like, what are my goals even mean? What do they even mean? You know? And now I do comedy because life's a joke, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, if I know one thing from seeing a lot of comedians, there is not athletic requirements. Is that a polite way of saying it?
I would 100% agree. You do have to be pretty disciplined in some arenas, but yeah, I could be quite a bit less athletic and still be considered one of the most athletic comics.
Fun. And so did you find this kind of athleticism, was it normalized for you and just something you took for granted? Or do you still take it as a kind of confidence within the dating world?
Well, you got to remember, again, like we spend 4 hours or so a day swimming back in the day. Like, you know, our training schedules are actually insane. And then when we go on competitions, you travel with your team and stuff like that. So majority of your friends are in the exact same scenario you are and probably have, you know, they're athletic themselves. They're maybe larger than normal, maybe stronger than the average person. So it really normalizes that to you. And, you know, we are out of school quite a bit. Like we'd go up to the Olympic Training Center and spend, you know, a month there or something like that. So I knew people from school, but it was like certainly less a big part of my world as the swimming stuff was. So I definitely, and then when I went to school, the entire thing was based around UT athletics, where I had study hall, I had dining hall, I had, you know, all these different things, weights, you know, obviously practices themselves. We went to parties together. Like it was all with athletes. So dating outside of the athlete pool, it was very, very strange. And it was one of those things where I was like, I was happy I met Matthew because he was a swimmer, but not nearly as intensely as I was, but was very acutely aware of that world and could understand why I'm a bit crazy as a result. So I was like, it's going to be really difficult to date someone with no background on what I'm up to at all and have to explain to them the level of obsession, you know, competing at that level and that, you know, how much that takes over your day-to-day life.
Yeah, but it's a fun twist of the story that whilst racing guys in the playground didn't work out for you, he first noticed you via your swimming. So it kind of worked out in the long term.
Ha ha, boys. They're probably like, we are all set, just like we said up top. We are okay. We do not want to date you. No, Matthew's great too. And he's also one of those unique guys who's like so confident in himself that like he's not intimidated. A lot of men can be intimidated by a strong woman, but using that in the literal sense of the word, you know, we're both large people. So it's really credit to him that he was like, I like that rather than, oh, I don't like that because it makes me, you know, insecure, which I think is super, for me at least, that was like an absolutely essential part. I cannot date someone who is not going to be supportive, you know, be threatened by what I'm trying to achieve and stuff like that. So I think that's an important part. I don't know. I think that's getting better too. Like, well, especially New York City, there's a lot of very powerful, strong women here who have the same mentality. But in the South, it's a grab bag.
And also, I like what you said about the like level of intensity of your sport, that he understood that, because it sounds like talking to him, because he very much approaches comedy in that way, like you have your own obsessions. And so you can sort of relate across the aisle.
Yeah, which became even weirder when I started doing comedy as well. Because I mean, at first I was like, I can 100% understand if you don't like this. You think that I'm like kind of encroaching on your territory. But he was actually extremely supportive. Once again, he, you know, he was really awesome about it and was like, as long as you take it as seriously as I do, then I don't think there'll be a problem. In fact, it would be a net positive because now we can share another area of our lives. So let me just say, I like him. He's a good dude.
The reviews are in. Good to know.
The reviews are in. I would give him strong approval ratings.
I thought you were going to give him a score out of 10 for a moment then. I was like, ooh, this could be controversial.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was like, do I give him anything but a 10? I would give him a 10, but then that sounds like kind of cheesy, right? Like, let's just give him an A+. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm too cynical. I don't know if I believe it. Lovely and all as it is. I don't know if anyone's quite a 10. But then it's a weird thing in general, right? Because when we think about that idea of like a 1 to 10 rating, you do hear that in the dating world in terms of looks. And
yeah,
it's such a strange thing to me, because not only is it obviously so subjective, but also I think I'm yet to meet anyone where I feel like they accurately would rate themselves as well.
100%. Oh, yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And it's also definitely always harsher on the women. You know what I mean? In my opinion. maybe I'm biased because I'm a woman. It does seem that women get rated on their looks quite a bit more often. And you're like, well, no wonder I'm freaking vain and spending hundreds of dollars on makeup. You know, this is just a constant thing that we got to like pay attention to. Meanwhile, Matt like wakes up and he's just like, I gotta go to like do a photo shoot, and just walks out. What are you doing? He's like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, do you need a prep? And he's like, no, no problem. I'm like, okay, fine. Great. No worries. I would stress about that for 2 months, but it's fine. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, that must be lovely. Wow. But I think you're right. I think there's a way even like listeners can test this out. Like if you ask people in your life what they would rate themselves out of 10, they probably won't like the question, but you'll learn a lot from the answers, because I've done it. And definitely the guys take into account a lot more than the women do. The women very much lead with, okay, I'm going to analyze my looks and I'm going to downplay every quality I might have. I'm going to knock it down a few points. Whereas the guys are like, well, I've got a car, so I'm at least an 8.
Dude, I have the greatest, well, not the greatest, like a kind of sad, but also funny story about that. When we first started dating, within our first year, Matt got stand up on Conan, on like the late show, Conan O'Brien, and went really well. And the set was on the front page of Reddit. Obviously got a lot of traction. It was really cool. I was like so excited for him. And it was just like his first late night television appearance. So I'm going through and I'm like looking at it and stuff like that. I'm like, oh my God, like this is so exciting. And he's like, oh, don't read the comments. And I was like, I'm going to read the comments. You know, why would I not? And I'm scrolling around. And then one person goes, I met him at a show once and his girlfriend was there and she was really beautiful or something like that. That's the first person. And I was like, okay, don't hate that. Then there's someone uncommented underneath. Oh, we need a picture of her. Then they started posting all these pictures of me. And the guy goes, oh, that was not her. And then they kept going and they go, oh, yeah, this does not look like, you know, beautiful. This looks like, you know, like a generic, someone called me a generic Sims character, which is fucking funny. And then they kept just ripping on me and like why I wasn't like good looking enough to date him. And I was just like, are you insane? Like, it made me so angry. And the reason it made me angry, first and foremost, was not a single comment addressed the fact this was the year of 2016, where I was like a favorite to make the Olympic team and, you know, didn't. But it was like pretty big news. Point being, if you looked up my name, there were a lot of articles in reference to my swimming accomplishments, but no one ever mentioned that. Not a single one of the, I'm assuming, guys made, like, it was 100% what does she look like? And it was like, 20 years of my goddamn life. This, like, I don't care. Like, I mean, I do, obviously, because everyone else in the world cares. But at the same time, it's really annoying because you're like, no matter what you accomplish as a woman, sometimes you could be a goddamn NASA scientist. And they're still like, what does she look like? First and foremost. So it's really, really difficult for women to like have a normal world to live in, like, and a normal sense of what's important for them when they're constantly being rated on this thing that ultimately you don't have a ton of control. I mean, you can get your eyebrows done and like put some moisturizer on, but like realistically you kind of got what you got, you know? It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of these things when you start analyzing people in that way, no one's attractive to everyone. So you always lose.
Oh, exactly.
If your value is based on attractiveness. And I'm glad you gave that example, because that is one of the clearest examples I've ever heard of people going so far out of their way. Like, they will have Googled you, scrolled past your achievements, gone straight to the image section, you know, just to find these images, and completely ignored what was obviously coming up. Because I would imagine, if nothing else, most of the images were you in a pool or in swim gear.
With medals and very much clearly doing a thing that's more important than what I looked like. Or I mean, well, that's relative, but made me so mad, because had it been like if he was gay or something, they would have been like, oh, this guy's, you know, dating a professional athlete or a doctor or a PhD or, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and that's usually the first thing that I was led with guys. And then it's like, oh, and he's also attractive, or like, you know?
Yeah.
And I kid you not, they were posting pictures of like, they were like, oh, I thought she'd look something like this. And they posted pictures of Victoria's Secret models. I was so upset. I was so upset about the whole thing. I felt objectified. And also like they were calling me ugly. And I was like, that shouldn't bother me, but it does. And it bothers me because that's the only thing we're judged on. Anyway.
That is madness. I was talking to a previous guest, Eleanor Gabrielle, on her episode, and she was talking about the ways in which men and women in stand-up get judged differently, and like the kind of comments, you know, and she reads the comments, even though she knows she shouldn't. And, you know, she'll do like a wonderful set and it'll get so many views. But that what the comments take away from it is like her outfit. And even the good stuff is maybe like a woman being like, oh, I love that top. I wonder where she got it. The example you've given is where someone's gone so far out of their way to be like, no, no, we don't have commentary on his appearance, but let's find the nearest woman and we're going to critique hers.
Yeah, let's go source someone who we can judge throughout. Oh my God, everything was so, and it was, I felt so bad because it was like a big moment for him too. You know, he was like excited, like his comedy was getting a really positive feedback, but then like he felt terrible about the whole thing. So it really soured that experience. But I do think it actually helped our relationship at the end because he was really distraught about it. And, oh, look, this guy respects me at least. We got one. I'll keep him. You know.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's so validating just to be like, oh, I don't have to explain this to him.
Yeah, he understood why it was a problem. I also think it was helpful for him to see that. So I shared that story with a couple other people. Like I put it on my Facebook and a lot of people, some of their first responses was like, no, they're wrong. You're pretty. And I'm like, that's not the point. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whether you think I look good or not, like I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. I'll take a compliment. You can include that, but maybe put it after, you know, you're strong. You should have made the Olympics, damn it. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you know, acknowledgement of all this stuff that I've literally spent my entire life working for.
It is.
Now I'm all pissed again.
Sorry, I've got you right riled up.
No.
I'm just thinking about my own experiences as well, because I do a bit of modeling. And I think about even with something that is objectively shallow like that, you know, where I am very aware that the beauty standards within that industry are very, very narrow and very much driven by like ridiculous standards by the companies paying for the models, essentially. That's where so much of this comes to. So often, like, the thing that frustrates me most is like when the models get the flack. It's like, no, we're not creating this. I wish we had the power and autonomy. Trust me, like, we wouldn't set these narrow standards. It would be a lot easier for our career if we didn't have to retire after 10 years. But
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. But I mean, one quick example of that is a friend of mine a little while ago did a job she was super excited about. She did, I don't even mind calling them out. So Pantene did a new like root touch-up product.
That's a big brand, yeah.
Absolutely. So she was delighted. It was a TV ad. She was really pleased with it. And, you know, they picked her out of all the models. And it's, you know, you can't help but be delighted by that kind of achievement.
Of course.
She also is one of the youngest models at the agency. So I believe she was 16 or 17 at the time. And so the filming of it consisted of her roots being dyed grey so that this touch-up stuff could be put over her roots to make her blonde again. And that was what was being sold as this product will not only transform your roots, but what is implied is you will also look like a 16-year-old who clearly was never grey in the first place.
Who comes up, like, who are, like, what do they want? What are they, what's wrong with these people?
Maximum sales. That's what it comes down to. You know, big execs that are a million miles away from the effects of this stuff. They just want maximum sales.
Now, it definitely feels like whenever they are addressing any women's issues, it's like in such a pandering way, purely just to increase their sales. And listen, I get it. You need to sell your products. Like, that's why the company exists at the end of the day. But it feels like there's very little acknowledgement for the societal impact of showing a woman who's supposed to be standard or even a plus size woman who looks more like a standard woman. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, that's what, you know, any strong lady is going to have legs that look like that or something like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Here in the UK, plus size includes the average size in women's clothing.
So in that case, that's no longer plus size. That's the other thing that drives me crazy is the fact that maybe in the UK it's different. Actually, you guys, I know your sizing is different, but in the US it's like 0, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Like those are our sizes. But what does that mean? That's not real numbers.
Oh, yeah. You win if you're air. Yeah. You'll win if you are a zero.
But a zero is also in one store is a completely different size in another store. And they completely do it based on vanity. Like I remember growing up, you know, at Abercrombie, which was like really popular at that point, a zero was smaller. Like it was like the size of one of my thighs, basically. And it really messes with your brain, just being like these arbitrary marketing decisions that are being made on what your size should be and what's normal and stuff like that. You can't even pin down like, hey, a six is a normal American woman or an eight a normal American woman, because it's different in every freaking store. It's
also not. For every different woman as well, you have a different body shape you came with. And a size zero is completely unattainable for most women. Just
my bones
as is.
Would not go in there. Yeah. Just my bones would not go in there. And that's okay. You know, I'm healthy. I'm strong.
But that's the point, right? It's not aspirational, right. But it's sold to us like it is. And then we're surprised when a lot of eating disorders are on the rise. It's madness. For context for the listeners, as far as I know, a zero in the US is a four here. So that would give people an idea how small that is.
Okay, so you guys also have the like non-measurement based men, on the other hand. Theirs are like size, whatever, 36 waist or whatever. It's just inches. It's how many inches around it is. Which makes way more sense.
Although it's creeping in for us as well. So inches are starting to not be accurate on different stores. They're starting to bring in vanity sizing to make you feel like you're a size lower than you are. And that's how it starts, you know, because that you can understand why they do that. And before you know it, then none of it makes sense. But you're right that, in fact, points. I haven't given you any points. You get points for wonderful navigating the Conan situation in your relationship. And absolutely points for all you've said in this. No, also what you said about the ads, like even the ads that are selling themselves as the good guys. Like we have a lot here which are like Dove, the soap brand. And it's like a load of women in different states of undress and of different sizes. And it's kind of feels like the undertone is like fat women deserve soap too.
Why do we need to say that? First of all,
like that's how it kind of reads. Yeah.
I actually have a joke about that. I'll do it. If you ever come see me do stand up, anyone, you might hear this joke again. But one of my jokes is like, of course, you know, Dove is like the only group that's trying to do like body positivity. Of course, Dove wants me to embrace my curves. There'll be more surface area to wash.
There you go. Okay. It's not just me being cynical.
They're just trying to move loofahs, folks. That's all they want to do.
It's madness, but it's very difficult not to get taken in on this. And I think that the way we can loop it back to dating even more is the more we internalize that, I think the more we bring it into our relationship. And then that kind of terrifies me, that people could be in a relationship with someone they're really genuinely attracted to, but they start to question it because that person maybe gets undressed in front of them and they don't look like the people on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really tough. And I mean, I have a weird sympathy for young men. I really do, because they are given a lot of mixed messages. I really got to say, like, on one hand, they're being yelled at about like, you know, being kind to women or like partners or whatever, and like being like inclusive and stuff like that. But on the flip side, everything they're seeing in media does not reflect that at all. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it feels like there's like this double world that they're being exposed to at the peak of their, you know, sexual development. And then with porn added in the mix, I'm just like, how are they, there's no clear cut, like what a healthy, normal relationship and view on the other genders and yourselves should be. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel sometimes kind of bad for them. Where I'm like, it'd be really difficult to grow up as a young man and a young woman too. But you've got the flip side of like trying to, you know, make peace with all that. But they're confused as well. I don't know. Everyone's confused is the point.
Yes, I could definitely agree with that. And I think for me, a lot of what I see is that we are all raised with the expectations, but not with the appropriate ways of getting there. You know, and porn's a very good example of that, I guess, where there's this like fakeness of it. There's all the exploitation that exists in that industry, and some of it is pretty obvious, but people overlook. And yet, when do you ever see like a conversation about boundaries or flirting, you know, the verbal stuff that might come before the physical act? Like, so you're given all this, like, okay, all sex has to be like these people who, depending how you look at it, I would say athletes.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. They're, just tell you, like, I was a professional athlete and I'm still like, good for you. Like, bravo. That's a lot of splits. Let me tell you that. No thanks.
Yeah. So you've got all the expectation, but none of the like how that becomes possible in terms of conversation, in terms of safety, in terms of dating, making women feel comfortable, learning how to do the splits, All of that is missing. And then you're right in the media expectations in a broad way as well.
And it's tough. Like, I mean, hopefully that your parental units or your family unit will have like a healthy relationship as an example. But if that's not the case and that's all you're being taught, you're really kind of left to fend for yourself to understand what a healthy, safe, productive relationship can look like, you know, and how people are supposed to be treating one another. Now, hopefully, you know, as you grow older, you take it on yourself to learn those things. I don't think it's an excuse for any bad behavior, unfortunately, but I do think it's something that we need to be more conscious of, making sure young people have, you know, good role models in a lot of different ways in relationships and in, you know, body image stuff. I don't have the answer to it though. It sounds like we're kind of doomed, but that's what I would like.
Yeah, but it's sort of, I feel like a lot of it self-perpetuates. You know, like I wonder all the scenes that get cut out of TV shows because they're like, oh no, the flirting is too boring. Let's cut to the sex scene. And, you know, you do that enough time and that just becomes a standard that just doesn't exist. And then, you know, like I loved Bridgerton, for example, but a lot of the flack I saw it getting online from some people was this just goes from like them walking around like a beautiful garden and then suddenly they're fucking. There's like no in between. It's like, well, this is maybe an extreme version of that, but that's kind of our media in general. Yeah. Everyone is entirely covered up or everything.
Yeah. The point where you're like, hey, is this okay for you? That is not shown because everyone would be like, ooh, this feels too intimate. I don't know, but you're right. It's self-perpetuating. Unfortunately, the people who grow up watching all this stuff, why would they think to like add like the pieces in between? But we'll see. At least we're having these kind of conversations and there's some articles and stuff being written. There's a little bit more awareness around it, but it's not like it was 20 years ago where it was just like only Victoria's Secret models and everyone else is gross. It's getting a little better.
Yes. But. And, you know, me and you, we're going to fix it in this hour. But no, you're right. It is getting so much better. And is there any elements of this you've had to overcome in your own relationship where there's been maybe unrealistic expectations coming into it?
I have to give props to Matt. He's very, very complimentary and is like, he loves the fact that I'm strong. It's more just, I've had to kind of battle, like, I think we all battle internally. Like, you know, there's the part of you who knows this stuff doesn't matter and it's like what you bring to the table. Then there's the other part of you who's like, I'm getting older. I don't look like I used to look when I was 22. And that bothers me, you know, because of all these like subconscious signals that I've been absorbing my entire life and needing to kind of, you know, make peace with that. And occasionally you do and you're like, whatever, like I'll do what I want and just stay healthy. That's my goal. And then there's other times where, you know, it flips the other side and you're like, I gotta lose weight or like, I gotta, you know, do whatever it is and dye your hair or whatever. I don't know. Point being, the unrealistic expectations are more on myself sometimes, you know, and I go back and forth. And it's tough because I'm like, I consider myself a very, you know, stable person in that sense. And I'm like, if I'm still struggling with it, like everyone, the people who maybe didn't have as strong of role models growing up, like I was raised in the athletic world where that wasn't really, literally during swimming, like the chlorine would just burn my eyebrows off. I know, it's not an attractive sport. Point being, vanity like really took a back seat, you know, in the pursuit of excellence in the pool. So now just kind of trying to kind of come to terms with, you know, now I do a lot of stuff on stage and looks are more important again, because you're just inherently, you know, displaying yourself and what you're saying. And it's a big part of the jokes potentially. So, you know, again, everyone struggles with it. I think that's super normal. And you just kind of got to like be gentle with yourself through those struggles and like, it's okay. Just, you know, remember, this is not important. But if you're having a bad day and you are feeling a lot of pressure, it's okay to acknowledge that too. And just be like, I'm not wrong for that. This is just all the society's things kind of, you know, doubling down and taking a bigger impact on me than I normally would. Maybe understand why that's occurring. I've clearly talked to a therapist about this, huh?
No, I love it. I also go to therapy. We've been talking about relationships a lot. Lately, my therapist keeps reminding me that I am dateable because she seems to think I need to hear it. So, yeah.
You're like, I didn't bring that up.
Actually, I mentioned it the other day on the podcast where I was like, we were actually like checking our dates. We were like scheduling the next session and that's when she brought it up. And I was like, where did that come from?
I don't know. I guess we'll need to schedule a little extra time next week to unpackage that.
Yeah, that's the thing for me at the moment in terms of maybe that links back to expectations of like how good I should be at relationships and feeling like I'm not measuring up to that. And now I'm realizing it's more the people that I'm getting into relationships with and maybe the timing being off and other factors like that, as opposed to this relationship failed, therefore I did.
Yeah. Every relationship, I definitely believe, has like a very important role in your life. And as long as you've learned something about yourself and move forward as a person emotionally, you know, there's something positive to be said for it. As long as it's like a healthy relationship and there's no like, you know, weirdness involved, then get out.
Well, okay. So I want to run something by you as a fellow therapite. I just made that up. I think I'll keep it therapite. So
I like it.
Something I've been thinking about recently that's sort of like icky when you think about it in this way, but I'm trying to like figure out if it is the idea that essentially we become better at relationships by practice, right?
Yeah.
That is a big part of it, but it feels icky to me because that involves other people. Practice makes you better at most things, but then when it's practice that involves another person, are you practicing on that person?
Yeah. That's a good point. And like, you don't want to like have, you're like, okay, well, this is the person who I'm only having around just as like my mistakes, you know, just to kind of like get a couple of rounds under my belt. I don't know. I agree with you. I would say that I think, you know, when you're young, it's unlikely that the person you date when you're 16 is going to be the person who you marry. Right. So kind of appreciating that, like, you know, I want to respect this person and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But at the same time, it's okay. We're young. We're going to make mistakes because you can't, no one is perfect. No one's going to be able to navigate those waters with 100% accuracy. So I remember, oh my God, I dated this guy in college for 5 years and he was awesome, but it kind of became to the point where I was like, well, we really like each other, but I don't want to marry you. So at this point, I think I'm, you know, morally obligated to kind of get out of here because I'm very certain in that. Just because like our lives are going a separate way, you don't have anything bad to say about them. And I think we both had a net positive impact on one another, but it was like, okay, this phase is over. It's time to move on. And now he's, you know, happily living in the Midwest and I'm in New York City and our lives are extremely different. So it was like very apparent that that was like a good move. And he seems very happy with his girlfriend. And I'm like very happy with my boyfriend. And like, I think we're both better people relationship wise for each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I technically did practice on him, but at the same time, wasn't consciously doing that. I was trying to respect him through it. But it's different. I mean, it's different as you get older too, because like in college, it's easy to just kind of date someone for a couple of years. And you're like, well, we're inherently going to be with each other for 4 years, you know, in the same program. So you don't have to like move or, you know, any of the drama that comes when you get a little bit older, like move in together. Like there's none of that at that point.
Yes, some very compelling points made. Meanwhile, I was slightly distracted because I think you describing it as having a net positive impact on each other is the most fun like use of business terminology in a relationship.
I know. I clearly work in I work in tech, and literally I have a podcast where it's just about like, it's called Risque Business News, where we just talk about business stories. And so as a result, I'm very used to pulling those kind of jargon into my everyday life.
I love that.
It's very New York City of me, right?
It's very fun. But you have got me thinking about this because I guess maybe what makes the like potentially icky idea of practice okay is going in with good intentions and communicating and making sure everyone feels comfortable. Because certainly for me, when I was younger, I was around a lot of guys where their approach to sex in particular, because this is like maybe the example of it that feels the most extreme in my mind, where their approach to sex was to pretend they had more experience than they did and like deceive women about being more comfortable than they were, pretend that they knew what they were doing and then get practice in that way. Yeah, and that's the bit which feels like the most extreme version of it, to be like, oh, you're practicing on women's bodies whilst deceiving them. And so I guess, you know, maybe the antidote the other way is go in with the right intentions, communicate properly, make sure everyone's comfortable.
Well, and I think the reality is people are attracted a lot of the times to confidence, you know, and if you are able to go in and be, you know, pretty secure about who you are as a person and like, you know, what you expect out of the relationship or, you know, what your boundaries are, what you want, like, and be very like wanting them to have a really good experience as well. it shows that you are secure in who you are. And I think a lot of the times people are like, oh, I appreciate that. Why is that so refreshing? You know?
Well, that's it. And that, if you're struggling with your confidence, might sound really scary to initiate a lot of these conversations, but in the long run, probably less scary.
And if
you don't feel comfortable having these conversations, then are you in a position where you're going to feel comfortable having sex?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's just someone you meet like one night at a bar and you both just want to go home and have sex with one another and then never see each other again. And that's okay too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're on the same page with that, absolutely. If you're promising her a ring and then you're never going to talk to her again, maybe not.
Maybe not. Absolutely. But it's 2021, you know, do what you want to do, but also just be clear and like honest with people. And I think people are pretty receptive to that.
Okay. Well, I've not thought of a rule of the game, so I'm going to use that. I'm going to just be like, don't be icky. That's my summary of the prior statements that I've made. Have you got something you try and live by in dating or relationships?
Being acutely aware of how I am approaching something and trying to include self-analysis in that. So like there are times, I live in New York City and it is a stressful ass city. You know what I mean? And maybe in the winter it's snowing and it's cold and I'm a bad mood, you know, just bad day, bad mood. And I come home and I take that out on Matthew. And understanding that that's like a me problem and not a him problem. And that I need to, first of all, depending on how it all goes, apologize and explain to him, you know, be clear about like where I am with my own emotional well-being and understand how that impacts the people I love around me. You know what I mean? Like point being like, be super honest with yourself of like, are you really that mad that he didn't put up the dishes? Or are you more just cranky because you were mad at work and you're maybe a little annoyed about the dishes, but you blew it up out of proportion because you're frustrated about other things, you know? And is that fair to him? And then maybe you should go and express to him that that wasn't fair and this is why, and you'll try to do better in the future, you know? And then actually try to do better in the future too, you know?
Yeah. And that's a good way of keeping it at the level it's really at, you know, that your emotions may be above the situation. But if you can try and stay in some element of the logic, then that's a way to kind of counterbalance that. Because, we won't get into it, but I was in one relationship that was particularly bad where one of the reasons was she would be upset about other things, but she would want to have a go at me. So she would watch me, analyze my behavior and find something to fight with me about because she was angry about something else. So,
oh my God, and women are so smart. They'll find something. You know, because, like, you know what I mean? They'll pick some nitpicky little thing. Like, yeah, you didn't wash the mirror or like something random. And you're like, oh, you're right, I didn't. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it's the worst. It's really mean.
Yes, and me forgetting to wash the mirror is not a sign that I want to leave you and I don't care about you and I hate the appearance of your reflection. But some people, when they're feeling a certain way, will try and imply all those things.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you. We got into so many different things and I appreciate it. Great chat.
What a journey. Thanks for having me.
And so if people want to find you, your website is laurasogar.com.
Yeah. You can also find, I'm mostly active on Instagram. That's my bigger, you know, where I post a bunch of random stuff. It's Laura Sogar, LauraSogar. And I run shows in New York City. So if you live in New York City or you're visiting, hit me up or check out my page and you'll see a bunch of different things that I'm producing. I also have two podcasts. So one with my boyfriend, ironically, about doing stand-up comedy and how interesting that's been as a combo. Another one about business news because I'm crazy.
Yeah. So if you want the equivalent of me, somebody that also minds every side of their life for content, there we go.
Yep, exactly. How can I put this out to the world? And my cat also has an Instagram.
Oh,
of course he does. Let me grab him. Fast word.
This is. Oh my God. So he's adorable. How do we describe this cat to the listeners?
He's a Balinese cat, so a long-haired Siamese, and has the disposition of a rag doll. So he basically just lays in my arms like a baby.
So perfect. Adorable. Such weird podcast content, but so adorable.
Yeah, you know, I take any. I'm just his manager. It's my goal. It's just to manage my cat.
All right, we're going to wrap up. We'll talk cats in a minute. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.